When the hoop pines first started growing, there was 0.16% oxygen in the air. They started to put the oxygen in the air. It's now 16%, 18%. And it's the plants, it's the trees that have actually put the oxygen in so that we could evolve. In our evolution, we could not be here if it wasn't for the oxygen that those plants put into the atmosphere to allow us to take root and grow.
Those very first trees from way back when were gymnosperms, cone-bearing trees that grew in a time before there were flowers, before birds, and even before bees. Anne Jones here with Off Track on RN, and I wanted to see some of those trees and understand a little bit more about them. I know that there are some still alive in Australia today, so I made Morris Lake walk up the hill at Mount Coosa Botanic Garden in Brisbane to show me. He's the author of a recently released book called Australian Rainforest Woods, Characteristics, Uses and Identification. That looks pretty
I'm
steep.
I'm out of breath going up.
Yeah, and you've got to talk as well. Beautiful time of day.
It was pretty steep.
Let me ask you this, and it's a bit of a simple question, but what is wood?
Well, that's a very good question, actually, because one of the botanical identification divides plants into woody plants, and there are probably 200 or 300,000 of those species in the world. But that's not where I come from. What I have settled on, and a lot of others have as well, that our interest is in those woody species that in fact have at least a stem diameter of about 6 inches, so that you can get a usable piece of wood from that tree. And on that basis, that brings it down to around about 20,000 species in the world. And 5,300 of them are Australian. Now, it's a piece of magic, because if you ask the question, how many native wood species are there in Europe, north of the Pyrenees, you come up with an answer of 67 native tree species. And if you look at the UK, in England, you have 47 native tree species which produce wood. We have 5,300. South America about 3,500, Africa about 3,000. Australia has not had glaciation for 300 million years. Where you have glaciation for a 100,000 year period, for example, then at the end of that glaciation, everything has to migrate back in again from somewhere else. So you have to start anew. Whereas the magic of Australia here is that just over that ridge is a bunya pine. And that bunya pine has been growing continuously for 220 million years. That tree up there is over the 1 millionth generation of continuous growth with very little evolutionary change, and that is not found anywhere else on this planet.
Because we didn't suffer from a huge wave of ice taking over the continent many millions of years ago, it means that the trees have managed to survive where on other continents they're essentially frozen out of home.
And so we have a continuous evolution. So all those conifers were growing here between 220, 240 million years up to 135 million years. Now, think about it. There were no birds, there were no bees, there were no rabbits, there were no kangaroos, there were no lizards, there was no fish in the sea. Those conifers fed the dinosaurs, and they saw the dinosaurs off. So to me, I love to go and hug those trees because they are just so significant to our place on this planet. If they didn't put the oxygen into the air, we would not be here today.
Okay, so we're standing next to a number of sort of lines of these beautiful trees, very sculptural, aren't they?
Yes.
They've got a lovely straight trunk,
yep,
with thin branches,
yes,
and on the end of each branch is sort of like an afro,
yes,
a spurt.
That's a pretty good... You should write a book on that. That's brilliant.
It's sort of like a firework has exploded.
That's,
and you can
exactly
see these
right,
beautiful green sort of frondy, which I imagine would actually be quite spiky if we got close.
They are, yes.
They remind me of a tree that I know from my childhood, which we used to call a monkey puzzle tree.
Yes, monkey puzzle trees are of the same genus, of the same family, and they are the South American. But remember, the South America was hooked to Antarctica. We were hooked to Antarctica. Africa was hooked to Antarctica. And so they had this common ancestry then. So what we're looking at is a bunya pine, and it starts off growing as a sort of a pine tree, and it has the branches that come out, but they don't rebranch again. So you end up with a long branch with a cluster of, you could say, leaves, but they're not leaves. There's no leaves, really, visible leaves on the bunya pine. They are still stems, but they're flattened. And they start off flat when they're new, but then they gradually turn around and form a circle, and you can see that on some of the ones there. The male pollen, the male strobi, will be produced at the bottom of the tree, and the cones will be at the top. Once they get old, and then they start to form a canopy, and they will change their form, and you'll have a 100-year-old tree that will just have like an umbrella at the top and a plain stem coming down to the bottom.
That seems relatively unstable.
Well,
top heavy.
Well, what happens is once you get to that age, you know, there's still young ones coming on underneath, so they're producing the pollen, and within your rainforest, the wind comes on from the bottom and flows up through, and that picks up the pollen and flows it to the top, where it fertilizes the female parts at the top. If you were to grab this, you'd grab this as a handful of that there. You'll find that it's very prickly.
Oh yes, it's quite fibrous. So
oh, yes,
by which I mean stiff.
Yes.
I mean they don't bend to the touch.
No.
No. What a beautiful tree.
These trees didn't evolve really all that much because there were no insects. If these developed one that had a flower, then it wouldn't be fertilized because there were no bees, there was nothing to fertilize it. These trees here have remained relatively unevolved. Now, that brings me to another story. If you go up onto any rainforest, then you will find that within the rainforest you have high rainfall, and so you have trees that grow in, then you have margins where there are changes of climate that happen. If you go onto the Atherton Tableland, for example, you've got an area that's around about 200 kilometres long and about 50 kilometres wide. There are 600 individual species of trees growing in there. In the margins, then, you have 400 marginal tree species. And in those marginal tree species are where the eucalypts and the acacias evolved, because all of a sudden you have, you know, a tree like that might produce a million seeds a year. It only needs one to germinate to replace it. So there are, it's a pretty sort of a bad ratio of survival. But in every generation there are mutations and there are cross-pollinations. And so if one of those seeds is taken an insect picks up a seed and takes it, or a bird flies out and takes it and drops it somewhere else into a different environment. If it germinates and starts to grow, and if the changes in that mutation now suit that environment, then that will grow and it will more than likely become another species.
Less than 0.5% of Australia's landmass is currently covered by rainforest.
So we are in a pretty precarious position right now. And you could say, well, you know, it's because there's no high rainfall areas left. One large tree in a rainforest will in fact put something like 1,000 litres of water into the atmosphere, sucking it out of the soil and putting it into the atmosphere. That's why it rains heavily in a rainforest. Then you have a rain shadow that actually, as the prevailing winds blow, then behind the rainforest will be another area which will be gradually descending rainfall. The big problem is that if you remove those rainforests and you only have one go to allow it to regenerate, if it doesn't regenerate that straight away, you will never again have rainforest there. And, you know, people say, why are there deserts? If you take away the rainforests, then you will not get as high a rainfall. It's a pretty delicate situation for us. Worldwide, at the moment, the harvesting of rainforests, by 2025, 80% of the rainforests on this planet will be harvested. That's within my generation.
On RN, you're listening to Off Track. I'm Anne Jones, and with me at the Botanic Gardens in Brisbane is Maurice Lake, a wood enthusiast and author. Australia has 3% of the forest cover of the entire world.
There's been a change throughout the world. China is now the largest manufacturing country in the world, and they need timber to manufacture now 40% of the Western world's furniture. When China had the big floods in 1998, in the year 2000, they suddenly decided that they would stop logging altogether in China, and they stopped logging. At that time, they were importing 4.5 million cubic metres of timber a year. In 2009, that had increased to 45 million cubic metres of timber. I don't know what it is now, but it must be close to 60 million cubic metres. And unfortunately, we can't control that. It's supply and demand. We live in this supply and demand world. So the problem that we have is that it's very easy to falsify records, because a lot of our northern neighbours have huge rainforest areas, but they don't really have the control. For example, the Townsville University and the Papua New Guinea University calculate that 362,000 hectares of trees a year are being cut out of Papua New Guinea. That means that in approximately 13 more years, there will be no rainforests left in Papua New Guinea. And we're planting them down to palm oil. Now, as soon as you plant it down to palm oil into another cropping species, you will never bring that area back to rainforest again. And so you're going to have a dramatic effect on the climate, and that is something that is a human-induced climatic situation.
As it stands at the moment, tree identification and lumber identification all has to do with botanical information. The bark and the leaves of the tree tell us which species it is and therefore where it's from. So take this example. A tree is logged somewhere in the world. Perhaps it happens illegally. It's then shipped on to another area where it may be treated and then stripped of all of its botanical identifiers. It can be passed off as a higher quality or even as a legal log. And there's almost nothing that can be done after that stage to identify where the trees actually came from, whether they're legal or illegal, endangered or common. Maurice Lake is advocating to change the practice of wood identification so that the movement of lumber around the world can be better regulated.
To be a dendrologist and study wood, you have to follow the recognised practices of how you actually go about that. And part of the process is that they use a microtome, which is used in medical terms to actually cut slices of tissue. And the problem is with wood is it is very hard. And if you get very, very hard wood, you probably have to boil that timber within all sorts of chemicals for a few days so that you can get it so that you can take a slice. So it takes a long time to do it and it's quite difficult. I have a friend in France who's Jean-Claude Kéré, was an orthodontist. People kept sort of saying to him, no, you can't put sandpaper on the end piece of a piece of wood because you get sawdust all in the wood and you can't do it that way. And he simply said, I've been polishing teeth for 30 years. I tell you, I can polish the end grain of a piece of wood and not get sawdust in the timber. And so he actually bought equipment off the shelf and developed a new system, a new protocol for actually being able to prepare the end grain of a piece of wood and then take a photograph. And his photographs are so beautiful that you can actually see down into the vessels because he has a full piece of wood that hasn't been touched. It's in its original colour form. It hasn't been manipulated in any way.
These photos are fascinating. They show large and small dots, dark and light patches and lines, circles, tubes, the actual structure of that piece of wood. And when he saw these crisp photos, an inkling of an idea came to Maurice Lake. He thought of another friend.
A great friend here, Ken Jackson, who was one of the world's top axemen. And his life was harvesting timber in Australian forests. And Ken can actually pick up a piece of wood, an Australian wood, and he can look at it and just, you know, after a few minutes, he'll just say, oh, yeah, no, that's Gidgee. That's all right. That's Acacia crumbii, okay? No problems at all. And so I went to Ken, too, and I said to Ken, can you sort of tell me, you know, how it was that you identified that piece of wood as Gidgee? And he thought for a while and he looked at me and he just said, no, I don't know, it just is. Ken's brain was actually acting on pattern recognition. And so I actually am endeavouring to get a program running to be able to use computer pattern recognition to identify these species. We can then very, very quickly be able to identify in any location a piece of timber or a log on a ship or whatever.
Now, when you look at the photos, there's all these different textures, closely knit, dots open, dots that are darker. What actually are you looking at?
There are only three or four different types of vessels to perform different functions. And some of them actually go crossways through the trunk and some of them run longitudinally up and down the trunk to actually carry water from the bottom and some of the soluble minerals and to take the starches from the leaf that are created by the photosynthesis in the leaf and take those back down to store in the roots and also for growth and all that sort of thing. And when they die, each species has its own significant chemicals that are mixed in with the tolulose. And so you get different hardnesses of that timber according to what's happened. Only the very small cambium layer underneath the bark of each tree is what is growing. So outside of that is the bark, which is forming a covering over the tree and protecting the tree. And inside of that is the wood that is still being used. It's still alive, but not reproducing. But then in further in that you have the core, the hardwood.
So the idea then behind the identification using these end grain cuts would be that each species would have a particular manner of putting together all the little bits and pieces.
Exactly right.
Into a pattern.
Exactly right. The genes.
I have some questions.
Yes.
Because my understanding is that the structure of the tree can change given a whole heap of environmental factors. It could be lots of rain or lots of wind that might influence.
And so that's called variability. And there is a large amount of variability, and that is one of the major factors that will need to be brought in. So within the algorithms of identification, you can in fact include variability. So it will accept within a certain range a variable that is found within that species.
Now look, I've met many people passionate about the environment over the course of my career and my life, but you're actually one of the first people I've met who is particularly passionate about wood.
Yes.
Not just trees, but wood. So what is it about this wood that attracts you?
It's beauty. Every time I pick up a different piece of wood, it's telling me a new story. I'm surprised because we were in the process of selling a very old Brisbane house. And the inspectors that came to inspect that house could not identify the timbers that were in that house. But it is really important, the timbers that are in that house, because some of them have been there for 150 years. Down at the church at St Andrews is the basement floor that was laid down 130 years ago. We just had to put new sewage pipes through. We pulled the floor up. It is of Carey, of Queensland Carey. And they are just lying on a little coating of bitumen in the middle of an area where the white ants would eat your legs off. We put every one of those Carey rafters back, not touched, and we used 60% of the flooring again. We turned it over because the top was just worn, and so we turned it over. That timber from those species has qualities about it. We won't use it commercially because it takes 60 years before you can get commercial timber, whereas you can do it in 30 years with the other one. But what do you get as a product? You get a product that you can't put in the soil and after 10 years it's rotten. And this timber here, you can build something and make something and it'll still be there. Like this piece of wood here, that is a New Zealand kauri. That piece of wood is a perfect piece of wood. It is 245,000 years old. That I'm holding in my hand here now. It's a perfect piece of wood, 245,000 years old. Can you imagine what it would be like if somebody were to take the genes out of a dinosaur bone and bring a dinosaur back to life? They lived here 130 to 160 to 65 million years ago and were wiped out. Could you imagine the fuss that would be made if you brought a dinosaur back to life? Here are trees here that have been growing continuously here for 240 million years. And that's why when I pick up a piece of wood like that, which is a kauri, which has been growing for 240 million years, its ancestors. How many generations can I nominate? This guy's got million plus mums and dads and granddads and you could get great, 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 great granddad. That is just mind-blowing.
Maurice Lake is a wood enthusiast and author. His book, Australian Rainforest Woods, is out with CSIRO Publishing, and the details are on our website, abc.net.au/rn/offtrack. My name's Anne Jones. This is Off Track on RN, the program which takes you somewhere unexpected every single week. And remember to meet me here at the same time in 7 days' time, because that's when I'll take you somewhere else.